Lands Commission.
City Attorney John Barisoni and City Manager Richard Wilson have been criticized not merely by advocates of the Beach Flats and also, I guess, in other contexts around Pelton Street giveaway, as I call it, or the Pelton Street Palaces deal, where the homeless garden project was ousted for these $700,000 homes, what seemed to me to be a very questionable anti-democratic process. But also homeless activists have been concerned with the city attorney and the city manager rubber-stamping police misconduct around the homeless. In essence, I'm asking you, would you be sympathetic to getting a new city attorney and a new city manager?
I'd have to speak with both of them first. You know, I mean, I'm not gonna make any decisions on the basis of hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I know John Barisoni. I think he's a good attorney.
I like John personally.
Yeah. And you know, I personally, I believe he's made some wrong calls.
Mm-hmm.
But is that due to any shortcomings of staff? Or is that because of marching orders that they've received from the council? If it's just a matter of them receiving marching orders from the council, you know, then I think it's possible that we can work with staff and sort of change things around. I want to work with staff, and that goes not just for Barisoni and Wilson, the city manager. But that goes with everybody. I think the staff in the city is very good, very conscientious, and professional in what they do. But I think that there's a lot that we can do to make them more open to the public, more receptive to public comment and opposition, more respectful of dissent. And I look forward to staff being able to speak their mind rather than you know, producing result-oriented product, which you know, doesn't necessarily reflect reality. It just reflects what the city council wants them to say. I don't want staff, if I get elected, to be a bunch of yes people.
How about a public process whereby members of the public could have some dialogue with the staff? I know that many of us in the Civic Auditorium on Tuesday and Thursday nights would have loved to ask a few questions of these high-priced folks sitting over there by the side of the room there.
Yeah, again, as a council person, it would be a priority to improve the interface between the public and staff. Again, I necessarily don't fault staff for that problem. I think that to the degree there is a problem with staff being receptive to public comment and dissent, I think that's a sort of a culture that has been fostered by the current city council. And I have every confidence that with a different city council in place, we'll be able to work with staff to ensure that government is more open to people and that staff is more responsive to their needs.
Would you be willing to go, and this is a slightly different question, Keith, now that I've got you here on the hot seat.
Sure.
You and other candidates answered a number of questions at the Peace and Freedom Party Forum yesterday that I thought were very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You got some flack from one of the members in the audience afterward, I'll tell you, for suggesting that you go to people like myself and Karen Gillette rather than to the homeless people themselves directly to find out what they want and need. Would you have a process of accessibility whereby there would be regular meetings with not just appointed individuals or self-appointed leaders or social service bureaucrats, whoever, but with individuals from the homeless community who just simply wanted to come in and tell you what their concerns were? And I'm not just saying, you certainly would say, call me up and I'll talk to you, but would you set up an institutionalized process whereby there would be a regular meeting twice a month or every week or at some particular time like that for people to express concerns about, let's say, a law barring discrimination against the homeless and employment and accommodations, about representation of the homeless on city commissions that are appropriate? I know you had a problem with that because you didn't know about the status, how a homeless status might interact with the ability to fulfill a job, but I can assure you that some people live outside and they do, you know, twice as much as the rest of us and still feel they want to be represented in city government.
Mm-hmm. What's the question?
The question is, would you set up regular meeting times, announced meeting times, whereby homeless and poor people could come and talk to you, you know, independently of the good old boy, good old girl channels, essentially funnels all money at the present time?
I don't know any good old boys or good old girls, first of all.
Well, I could introduce you to a few.
Huh?
I could introduce you to a few.
Well, that's okay.
They don't talk to me much, actually.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great idea. I really do, and to be quite honest, I hadn't thought about it. But now that you mention it,
sure.
I mean, they're a very vulnerable part of, or wishful thinking, they would be a very vulnerable part of my constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And
how about
I think the city council has a responsibility to be then, as a result, a little more proactive in reaching out to them.
How about direct Spanish translations for folks who don't really get that now?
Absolutely.
How would you do outreach into the poor in Spanish communities? Is I guess a question. I'm not going to lay these questions on you for answers because I know that you need to think about them. I'm just kind of raising them. I know that you also Tim Fitzmaurice raised the issue at the forum of how he spoke to Citizens Police Review Board members and was flabbergasted to hear that they were completely complacently happy with the existing situation, when in fact it's quite obvious from that when in a town where there've been at least two if not more, well, the county, going to include the county, you got more shootings, but certainly two serious shootings, one fatal shooting of a poor person that didn't even get an independent investigation, we're in really sad shape. Even when the Citizens Police Review Board has the power to do that now and chooses not to, would you be interested in making sure that there are people on the board who are really advocates and not simply, time servers putting in stuff for their resumes, which seems to be the current problem?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word advocate. I'd say representative. That the police review board should be comprised of a cross section of the community, including someone who can speak for people who find themselves homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
I mean, again, I don't think anybody could really speak for them, but someone who would understand more than a person from the university or a librarian or something who is,
somebody like you, Robert?
Like me? No. I have no faith in that board at the moment, Keith. I would hope that at some time in the future I would, but I've seen so much use of the board as a fig leaf to defend, cover, and mask police department misconduct of the most, not just beating people up on the street or shooting them, but institutionalized misfiling of reports and complaints, which Belcher did in the summer of 1995 and went to the board and got it all rubber-stamped, as well as the city council, including Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, I'd like to point out at this time. So if you took this position, it would be more radical than the ones on the current city council, and you should probably think about it. You might lose some of your mainstream support.
Mm.
But, of course, I'm not concerned with mainstream support. I'm concerned with what I consider to be the issues that I think are really most important to us, namely really curbing police misconduct and not just talking about it. And I'm not saying you aren't, but I mean that I'm kind of laying it out for you. You originally called in to talk about the Beach Flats, right? I don't want to take you away from that.
Oh, the Beach Flats, right.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I mean, you can talk about anything I've babbled about, but if you want, or you can talk about what's happening in your campaign and the many hundreds of dollars you'd like people to bring today. Or
just one more quick thing about the boardwalk. Sometimes, and it happens very rarely, the process gets elevated above substance.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly believe that this is one of those times where the way that this decision-making process has been furthered is almost upstaged, the merits of the plan itself. I think that at this point my main complaint is that nobody asked the people who live in Beach Flats what they think of the plan. Nobody asked the residents of the Beach Flats what they think of the problems or what they think of the solutions. And I think that's ridiculous.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
And without that information, and I'm talking more than just informal chit-chats with people who live down there, I'm talking about surveys, studies, really getting the damned information.
Mm-hmm.
How can you say that your plan is the cure for everything that ills the beach area? I think it's incredibly arrogant, and that's where we need to start. I was reading the Sentinel this morning.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I made that mistake, and in the op-ed. Hey, I know you read the Sentinel too, Robert. So
I try to avoid it, but there it is.
But there it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've read it already, but there's this cartoon.
Oh boy!
By somebody I don't know the guy's name.
Weiss.
I don't want to know the guy's name.
He's a Weiss guy.
Yeah. Well, he's a real putz because he drew this cartoon essentially of.
It's a guy with a shopping cart with a dead dog in it.
A shopping cart full of bottles and a dead cat standing next to a guy who's shooting a pistol next to a guy who's laying in a pool of blood with a knife in his back, and
Third Street and Beach.
Street sign that says Third Street and Beach Street, and the guy with the shopping cart is saying, I'm against the beach plan. I like the neighborhood just as it is, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, we're really dealing with a real intellectual here.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, but in a sense, it's very illustrative, because I think that that's the mindset that a lot of people who have set out to fix the beach plan are coming from. But is that a true reflection of life in the beach area? I don't think so.
No. And I'm hoping that you'll be at this fiesta at 5:30 on October 1st, where we're hoping to get many people from the beach flats to speak to the issue, to speak to each other, and it's more important than the council, because I think they will have shut off oral communications to new people by that time.
I will be there.
To speak to the community,
I will be there.
That's great.
Listen, I got to run.
All right. Do you want me to announce your event, or how do you feel about that?
Huh?
Do you want me to invite people to your event, or what's your feeling?
Oh, why don't you just come, Robert?
Come.
Just come, and if you like it, we'll see.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for being on the air, Keith, and we hope to get regular reports from you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Just call me.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was environmental attorney, Beach Flats plan opponent, and city council candidate Keith Sugar, who's having his kickoff campaign today, and spoke on the air about a number of issues. And I'm always glad when city council candidates, city council people, folks in the public eye are willing to go to the public, and particularly to go to a critical segment of the public. I try not to give anybody a free ride on this show. I want to make sure that hard questions are answered, even if it doesn't make me popular in some quarters, and that's what we try to do. The phone lines, however, are now open for you at 427-3772 on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. 427-3772 if you want to join this discussion. We're ranging from the election that's upcoming in November to the beach flats giveaway, as I call it, to the inadequacy of citizen police review. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Mr. Robert, how are you?
I'm good.
I wonder, when we met in the library the other day and you dropped your wallet, you looked at me after someone gave it back to you and said something about, oh, this is the kind of people you hang out with. What does that mean?
I think it was a joke.
Okay, I accept.
Mm-hmm.
I accept.
Good.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, it's always good to get these things cleared up. Do give a call if you're interested in joining this dialogue. 427-3772 in the studio. 427-3772. This is the public... We actually are a public radio station in the sense that we invite you in. This is not one of those exclusionary meetings where you have to be approved by the head of the group to get through the door in terms of get on the air. We let you on the air because we want to hear what you have to say. Give us a call, 427-3772. We've been talking about a number of subjects, and we have about 20 minutes left in this show. I also want to announce that 3 o'clock tomorrow, on Monday, the 21st, we're going to be playing a tape by Nick Kirkendall. Nick is with the Beach Area Working Group, and I'm not sure if the tape represents his views or those of the group, but it certainly represents views worth hearing in any case. Probably we should say they represent his views until we hear from the steering committee of the group. And that's going to be an hour-long discussion of the beach flats from 3 to 4 on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 tomorrow here at 3 o'clock on Monday. This is going to be Nick's maiden tape, so to speak. He's trying to get a show here on Free Radio, and we do have spots available for those who are interested in speaking out on public issues, for those who are interested in providing the kind of material that you don't find on ordinary commercial radio and sell-out pseudo-public radio, the kind of NPR vanilla flap-trap that unfortunately is substituting for real investigative journalism, real scathing analysis, real critical looks at what's going on in the communities across the country, the kinds of priorities we have, the kinds of situations we find ourselves in. What else have we got for you here? We want to finish up Phil Beer's analysis of the beach flats, and I'm going to continue with Phil's interview from this morning. But first, I'm going to rewind a little bit so we can not miss what we were doing. And here's a phone call before that happens.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I just wanted to inform people that Food on Bombs is serving right now at the town clock.
That's at 1 o'clock every Saturday and Sunday, right?
Actually, yeah, they get there early, about 12:30 or so. But they're there now with hot soup and bread and all sorts of stuff.
No police department, no health department, no injunctions?
Nope.
That's good to hear.
They'll come and eat.
You know about Feed the People suffering those things coming down the line.
Yes, I do.
I hope Food Not Bombs gets out there and gives a little support to those other food operations in town.
And their number is 425-3345.
Food Not Bombs, you want to help them out, 425-3345.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
And the number of Feed the People, if you want to help out that organization, is 425-3333. So you can actually just make two quick calls and help out two groups. Let them know that you're interested in what they're doing. Let them know you support them. Got any old celery or some tomatoes? Actually, you should bring those to the October 1st rally at City Hall. I think they might come in handy in dealing with the City Council. That's a grand old tradition, throwing rotten vegetables at politicians. It seems to have been lost in the civil giveaway of people's rights in this country. You know, it's an interesting thing. We heard something about rudeness from Mayor Celia Scott at the City Council meeting. And the very brutal rudeness of the whole process, which we are being yanked through, is something we're expected to stomach in silence or wait till the next election to deal with. It seems to me a kind of a contradiction in terms. Folks who want to be polite, I can understand being polite in a forum where you're not being denied your basic rights. But if you are being denied your basic rights, I would advise you to raise your voice. And I would advise you to resist that. That's what I tend to do, and sometimes I may not sound as pleasant as at other times, but I think it's important to draw a distinction between the manner of speaking about something and the substance. If you are being substantially disenfranchised, as this community is, the community has to rise up and just say no. And sometimes this can involve being extremely rude. Extremely rude. It's sometimes the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. Let's hear a little more of Phil Beer.
Those things could all be utilized to build housing down there.
What else could be done with the beach flats in terms of providing more resources for the community down there? And that should be done, that you would like to be done, if, let's say, a new city council is elected that stops this beach flats giveaway and turns things in a different direction.
Oh, there's a lot of possibilities, I suppose. My present experience with the current city council has built in me a certain distrust of a really heavy-handed role in the process by the city government itself. My sense has always been that if the city really took care of its essential business having to do with filling potholes and taking gangs and heroin dealers off the public sidewalks, that the private sector, the renters and the property owners would say, the renters would say, well, I'd like nicer housing, and the property owners would say, well, I'd like to own better housing, and that sheer internal private supply and demand, it being in the best interest of both renters and property owners, would cause housing to improve and the neighborhood to improve.
But surely if the city is willing to spend $3.5 million for a Third Street realignment project, that same money could perhaps be put into other projects that you would...
Oh, absolutely. The streets need to be surfaced desperately, that would make such a dramatic difference in the appearance and the self-esteem of those who live here.
How about a school for the beach flat?
It doesn't seem necessary to me. You don't have that many kids. I hate to isolate them in what would be, by and large, a Spanish school. It seems like segregation to me. I think it's far healthier for everyone involved if those people are mainstreamed into existing public schools, and I think that there is room in the existing public schools for them. That doesn't seem necessary to me.
Well, I suppose there isn't an argument to be made that the culture of the Spanish-speaking community might be preserved by such a school.
I'm not really sure that the Latinos themselves are in favor of that. I think that's sort of a white middle class assumption that is imposed on these people. And if you really got through to these people and got them feeling comfortable with you and talking to you, they would acknowledge that really they want to become a part of what this this thing we call America is. You know, they don't want to be a separate culture. They want to retain their culture. They consider themselves quite capable of retaining their culture without a bunch of patronizing effort on behalf of other cultures.
Provided they can retain their houses, of course.
Yes.
I definitely agree that the issue should be taken to the people for their own, you know, obviously what they want to do. And I guess to some extent I've heard that's what you and others are planning with this new group, Friends of the Beach.
Yes, we are trying desperately to really get the Latinos down there in front of the city council. Everybody is talking on their behalf, usually interpreting their desires in such a way as to fit their own preconceived objectives. It's really, nobody knows what they think. There really is a communication barrier, and the only way we're really going to get a handle on it is to get those folks down there in front of the city council, and we're trying very hard to get them down there.
And you're not being, I guess this is happening on October 1st?
There is an effort to get them, there's an ongoing effort, but we're trying to focus on the 1st, get some of them down there at the podium.
If I read from this rather handsome looking flyer, that
I bet.
You have a kind of a fiesta and a potluck supper planned down there on 5:30 Thursday, October 1st. Something about a speak out, and I guess what I gather, because the city council itself isn't even willing to listen to the Latinos directly at that time. I guess maybe they'll take a statement. I don't know, but they've closed off the debate. I guess you're asking the members of the community if they want to. To speak to the entire city, to speak to the...
Yes, in the public commentary, that is the last opportunity for the public to address the council on the BSOL plan. There have been 2 days last week, and this is the absolute last time, after which it's going to be shut down, and it's going to be an internal council decision. So this is the 11th hour. Those folks still haven't, well, they have to some degree. I've seen lots of them go down there in various ways. Last meeting, there was a circle marching around the outside of it, chanting objections to the BSOL plan and carrying signs to that effect. They feel more comfortable doing that. They feel, as one might understand, less comfortable actually walking up through all those people and speaking into the microphone in Spanish with a translator. One can well imagine that would be somewhat intimidating for them.
Sure. Well, it also says that on October 1st is going to be kind of a fiesta, sort of a potluck meal.
Yes, trying to get them to overcome their fears and realize that there is some community support, that there are some of us who really do want to know what they say, and that it's not like they're not going to be jailed if they come down on the wrong side. We can approach this in at least a slightly lighthearted way, have a taco and a soda, and then go in and just say whatever you feel to the council.
Right, or at least if the council will not allow that to happen, since they've declared only those on the list will be allowed in or allowed to speak, then perhaps the folks can speak to the media outside. I understand the council candidates, at least some of them, are willing to come and be supported at this affair before the city council meets.
Oh, yes. I think that everybody recognizes that the Latinos are the missing link here, the party most directly impacted by this plan, and the party that has been most reluctant to really express themselves. So there again, I would have to point out that we've given them many petitions involving hundreds of Beach Flats Latinos, the signatures on petitions saying just straight, simple, no Third Street realignment, I don't want to lose my house, and stuff on this very basic level. It's not like the Latinos haven't made their views very clear, in part by their absolute refusal to in any way support the plan. You know, if this plan were being received in half the way that Kennedy and the likes are acting like it's being received, there would be some evidence of Latino support for the plan. I would say that there has been absolutely none of that. And there has been this kind of timid, but it should have been listened to. You know, names on a petition is significant. If that's all these people feel comfortable doing, if that's how they want to express themselves, if they hesitate to stand publicly in front of 500 people and publicly identify themselves, that would seem to be sort of understandable, and you ought to pay some damn attention to a petition signed by them that says they don't like the Third Street realignment. But that hasn't been sufficient to persuade the council majority of what I am absolutely convinced is the case, namely that the vast majority, almost 100% of the Beach Flats Latinos, are very frightened by the Third Street realignment, and just don't want it to happen until such time, at least, as they are assured relocation housing, which is not the case now.
So they
may be timid, but they're not stupid. They know they're being jerked around. They know they're being led on with vague promises that are not contractually secure in any way. They've been played before in Mexico and here, probably, and they're not stupid. They don't want to get played. They're not letting themselves get used by the progressive council majority on this. They're abstaining and making their opinion known by virtue of not supporting them.
Well, one would have thought that the council, if they had support from the Latino community, would have brought them in there to talk about
it. Oh, hell yes, and they've done everything but physically carry them down there.
But
these people just won't be used that way.
Let me ask you this group, Friends of the Beach, in this attempt to assist, how can callers who are listeners who want to be helpful before the first or on the first help this effort to bring folks down to the council? I understand you're trying to make kind of a fiesta to...
Yes. They can give us a call. There are a number of functions that are needed. Mostly, as I imagine it, it's a matter of a number of us going down there. Some bilingualism would be helpful. Going down there and showing to these people that we have a certain amount of community support for them, that we're not just going to run them up the flagpole and leave them hanging out to dry, that we're going to back them and just encourage them and humanize ourselves to them.
So what number can people call to assist you in this area?
423-0170.
Give a call to 423-0170 to help Friends of the Beach. And we've been talking to Phil Bear, who's laid bare some of the facts, and I'm always impressed that kind of new information continues to come out about these issues, Phil.
Yeah, good. I'm impressed that you continue to seek new information.
Thank you.
And that was the infamous community activist Phil Bear, often on both sides of the firing line, depending on which committee meeting he happens to be at, taking it from all sides, and putting out a lot of good information for us here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Well, we are winding down and winding out, and we're actually going to turn to a much neglected segment of the population in the next hour. So you're going to be hearing a show concerned with kids, children, the youth, young. What's the name of the show that we got upcoming here? It's the Red Hen Hour with the notorious Emma, and she is quite a cluck, I'll tell you. We're going to go out on the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe Hour, a fine group from Berkeley that we often play on this show. This one, I think, has got a few yaks about the police department. We're going to be back on Thursday at 6 o'clock, where Bathrooms Appeals Broadside, sometimes I can't even say the name of my own show, will return for 2 hours. And we're going to be hoping you'll listen to the Beach Flats kickoff show, 3 o'clock tomorrow on Monday. Again, this is not by me, so all you folks who want to have an independent point of view on this, tune in at 3 o'clock on Monday for Nick Kirkendall, who's been doing lots of work with the Beach Area Working Group. He's going to be getting his own show, hopefully, and you'll be able to hear his first attempt around this. It isn't just an attempt. It sounds good, clear, and strong. You have to make your own judgments on what he says, but it sounds worth listening to. Thanks for staying with me, and tune in on Thursday.
Captain Elmer Hatchett of the San Francisco Police Department, and I'll be smashing down your door real soon, sucker. The idiots in Sacramento have given me the right to seize any of your property I want. And you know what? I don't even have to charge you with a crime. It's called assets forfeiture, and I say it's a pretty goddamn good law. Now, you're not about to disagree with me, are you?
Come on! We need some new computers! Let's go get them!
This has been Captain Elmer Hatchett with a public service announcement, and I'll be backing the truck up to your door real soon. So long for now, sucker!
Thank you.
because of this, the way that Officer Garazio, or Boots Garazio, as some of us call him, because of his manner of behavior toward homeless people a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
that it was because of his thrusting himself in there and manhandling the wife that he was attacked by Brian Andrus with a baseball bat.
Well, you know, when you have armed intruders coming into your home, and even if they are police, they don't have a warrant. From my understanding of that situation, the wife didn't want them. I told them everything was fine, go away.
That's correct.
And that's what they should have done. If they felt there was some sort of abuse, they should have went and obtained a warrant.
Right, or they could have used a lesser means by negotiating if they feared that the woman was being pressured or coerced.
And that's one thing I would like to point out to tenants and other members of the audience at this point. Should an officer ever come to your door, you're under no obligation to even open the door if they don't have a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
Should they knock on the door and say, hey, you know, the Santa Cruz police, you're perfectly within your right to say, excuse me, officer, do you have a warrant? And if he says no, you can respond by saying that I'm under no obligation to speak to you, open my door, to have anything else to do with you. Please go away. Thank you.
You know, Paul, I'm actually going to continue this subject after we hang up because there's been a very grim and ominous decision by the state Supreme Court on how parolees no longer have that privilege.
Hmm.
And I'm going to read about that as soon as we go, but I want to thank you for giving us this information. Invite people to come at 8:30 on Tuesday. Do we know the name of this case that's coming down the pike?
Yes, it would be Middleton versus Mike Van Dinner. Robin Middleton.
Robin Middleton. So if you want to follow one of these tenant cases, meet some of the Tresk people, see what it's all about, come on down to the county courthouse and check the calendars, see which department it's in, and go to the, I guess it's the Middleton case at 8:30 in the morning on Tuesday. That's going to be about 5 days hence, and I'll remind everyone that the Brian Andrus case resumes deliberations on Monday at 1:30. It ended its deliberations for the week at about 2 o'clock today, and it resumes on Monday at 1:30 in Department 5. So I want to thank you, Paul.
Well, thank you, Robert.
And encourage people to give you a call at 426-0644.
Help us help you protect your tenant rights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good advice. Very good advice. Know your rights. Something I've always urged people to do, particularly if you're on the street, but even more so, and you have more rights if you are in a dwelling that you're renting, or if you're fortunate enough to own it, you have substantially more rights. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. At the moment, you have the right to listen to us at 96.3 FM, and you have the right to call us at 427-3772. Our lines are open, and we are taking calls if you have any questions or comments. Something to contribute to this. Perhaps you've gotten the shaft from a landlord. Perhaps you feel that landlords are getting a bad rap. Perhaps you feel something we said is inaccurate, or perhaps we're just incomplete. You've got your own perspective to add to this. Give us a call again at 427-3772. As I was saying to Paul, I found an interesting story in the San Francisco Examiner, which for my mind, to my money in my mind, is one of the probably the best San Francisco paper around for tenant rights issues, homeless issues. That doesn't mean it's any good, mind you, but compare it to something like the Sentinel, the Mercury News, or the Chronicle, and it's at least two baby steps ahead of those papers, and also it's half as much. It costs only a quarter. It's one of the few newspapers that it's a quarter. The one disadvantage of the Examiner is that you get it a day late unless you happen to be up in San Francisco, or actually I think it's above north of San Jose. You can get it on the same day. Otherwise, what's dated today is actually yesterday's paper. But this story, yesterday or today, is quite shocking, and one that I'm going to read you I think is worth taking a moment to consider. Court wipes out parolee privacy. State's top bench okays searches without suspicion. Now, we're not even talking warrants here. Normally, you need a warrant. That is to say, the police need a warrant to enter your home. However, if you're a parolee, one who has been in prison and rather than serve out her or his full term, agrees to parole, then they had to prove at least what's called reasonable suspicion to search your house. That's the same standard that they can detain you for on the street if they think a crime has been committed and they wish to ask questions to determine what's going on, but which, by the way, you don't have to answer. Reasonable suspicion is a lower threshold than probable cause, which is the basis for granting a search warrant, and much, much less of a standard than beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the standard for a jury to find someone guilty in a criminal case. But here's the story. Court wipes out parolee privacy. State's top bench okays searches without suspicion. Law enforcement officers can search any of California's 108,000 adults on parole or their homes without having to show a reason to suspect wrongdoing, the state Supreme Court ruled. The 4-3 ruling, very narrow, issued Monday in San Francisco, overturned a unanimous 1986 decision that had allowed parolees to be searched based on, quote, reasonable suspicion of a crime or parole violation. For most other Americans, the Constitution requires a warrant and probable cause of a crime, a more stringent standard than reasonable suspicion, to authorize a police search. The court majority said allowing random searches of parolees would discourage crime. Dissenting Justice Joyce Kennard said that the ruling allowed searches of private homes and neighborhoods throughout the state by day or by night for any reason or no reason if a parolee lived there. This is now law in California, folks. But Deputy Attorney General Joe Carey said people who live with parolees or probationers suffer by definition a lesser expectation of privacy. He said the ruling didn't allow searches of another resident's body, clothes, or bedroom, and only the parolee's quarters and common areas of the home. What this means, O Santa Cruzans, is if somebody in your house is on probation or parole, which she or he may not have discussed with the household, may not want to make public information, then your whole common area of your house can be searched without a warrant, without reasonable suspicion, just for the hell of it, by the police department. It also prohibits searches conducted for the purpose of harassment and those conducted at unreasonable times. So we amend this by saying they can't search you at unreasonable times and, quote, for harassment, but they don't need any reason. Defense lawyer William Arzbacher said he would appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. He said that every other state and federal court that had considered the same issue had reached the opposite conclusion. Parolees are felons who have completed their state prison sentences and undergo supervision for 3 to 5 years after release. They must report regularly to parole officers, can be searched without a warrant, and can be returned to prison for the remainder of their parole period for violating parole conditions, which typically forbid drug use and all criminal conduct. There are 108,817 adults on parole in California, according to the State Department of Corrections. The case involved Rudolfo Reyes of Woodlake in Tulare County, who was in the last year of a 3-year parole term in February 1995, when his parole officer got an anonymous telephone tip about possible drug use and other misconduct. Police saw Reyes in his yard that evening, found no sign that he was under the influence of drugs, but searched his shed and found a small amount of methamphetamine. After unsuccessfully challenging the search, Reyes pleaded guilty to possession and was sentenced to 7 years in prison. That in itself, of course, is a major crime, and the criminal is not Reyes, but the system that's sentencing him. A state appeals court overturned the conviction, rejecting the Superior Court judge's finding that the search was based on reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing, and ruled that the search was therefore illegal based on the state Supreme Court's 1986 decision requiring reasonable suspicion for a parole search. In reinstating Reyes' conviction, however, the High Court noted that it had already approved searches without reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing for persons convicted of less serious crimes and placed on probation instead of going to jail. Adults must consent to such searches as a condition of probation, but juveniles, the subject of a 1994 ruling, have no right to refuse consent. Now, here's something I didn't know about. So according to this, if you're on probation, and usually that's for misdemeanor or lesser offenses, a condition may be included, which means you can be searched without reasonable suspicion in that case as well. Again, no expert on this subject. I'm becoming afraid to pick up the papers. I'm getting so alarmed. privacy rights should be no broader for an adult parolee who, like a juvenile probationer, must agree to be searched during supervised release, said the opinion by Justice Janice Rogers Brown. The expectation of privacy is greatly reduced when the subject of the search is on notice that his activities are being routinely and closely monitored, Brown said. The dissenters, Justice Kennard, Catherine Mikkel Weerdegger, and Stanley Mosk, said the court should have upheld Ray's conviction by finding instead that police had reasonable suspicion to search him. They also said adult parolees could be given more privacy rights than juveniles. The ruling recognizes no distinction between a private home occupied by a parolee and a prison cell, Kennard said. This again is from the San Francisco Examiner, for those of you who are interested, and it's September 23rd, that's yesterday's San Francisco Examiner. Court wipes out parolee privacy, state's top bench okays searches without suspicion, by Bob Agelko, staff writer for the San Francisco Examiner. Well, let's take a breather